Be careful, he said. He doesn't remember everything. I could give him a few memories, not much. The rest will have to wait, but Clary, remember that he doesn't remember. Don't expect everything. She must have nodded because he let her go, and then she was tearing across the lawn and into the tent, hurling herself at Simon so hard that he staggered back, almost falling over. He doesn't have vampire strength anymore. Go easy, go easy, Hermione said, but the rest of her didn't want to listen. She had her arms around him and she was half hugging him and half sobbing into the front of his coat. She was aware of Isabel and Jace and Maya standing near them, and Jocelyn too, hurrying over. Clary pulled back from Simon just enough to look up into his face. And it was definitely Simon. This close up, she could see the freckles on his left cheekbone, the tiny scar on his lip from a soccer accident in eighth grade. Simon, she whispered, and then, do you know me? Do you know who I am? He pushed his glasses up the bridge of his nose. His hand was shaking slightly. He looked around. It's like a family reunion where I barely know anyone, but everyone knows me, he said. It's
overwhelming?
Clary asked. She tried to hide the chime of disappointment deep down in her chest that he didn't recognize her.
It's all right if you don't know me. There's time.
He looked down at her. There was uncertainty and hope in his expression, and a slightly dazed look, as if he'd just woken up from a dream and wasn't entirely sure where he was. Then he smiled. I don't remember everything, he said. Not yet. But I remember you. He brought her hand up, touched the gold ring on her right index finger, the Fairfolk metal warm to the touch. Clary, he said. You're Clary. You're my best friend.
Alec made his way up the hill to where Magnus stood on the pathway overlooking the tent. He was leaning against a tree, hands in his pockets, and Alec joined him to watch as Simon, looking bewildered as a newborn duckling, was swarmed by friends. Jace, and Maya, and Luke, and even Jocelyn, crying with happiness as she hugged him, smearing her makeup. Only Isabel stood apart from the group, her hands clasped in front of her, her face almost expressionless. You'd almost think she didn't care, said Alec, as Magnus reached out to straighten his tie. Magnus had helped him pick out the suit he was wearing, and was very proud of the fact it had a slender stripe of blue that brought out Alec's eyes. But I'm pretty sure she does. You're correct, Magnus said. She cares too much. That's why she's standing apart. I would ask you what you did, but I'm not sure I want to know, Alec said, leaning his back against Magnus, taking comfort in the solid warmth of his body behind him. Magnus put his chin down on Alec's shoulder, and for a moment they stood motionless together, looking down at the tent and the scene of the happy chaos below. It was good of you. You make the choice you have to make at the time, Magnus said in his ear. You hope for no consequences, or no serious ones. You don't think your father will be angry with you, do you? Alec said, and Magnus laughed dryly. He has a great deal more to pay attention to than me, Magnus said. What about you? I saw you talking to Robert. Alec felt Magnus's posture tense as he repeated what his father had told him. You know, I would not have guessed that, Magnus said when Alec was done. And I've met Michael Wayland. Alec felt him shrug. Goes to show, the heart is forever inexperienced, and all that. What do you think? Should I forgive him? I think what he told you was an explanation, but it wasn't an excuse for how he behaved. If you forgive him, do it for yourself, not for him. It's a waste of your time to be angry, Magnus said, when you're one of the most loving people I've known. Is that why you forgave me? For me or you? Alec said, not angry, just curious. I forgave you because I love you, and I hate being without you. I hate it, my cat hates it, and because Katerina convinced me I was being stupid. I like her. Magnus's hands reached around Alec and flattened against his chest, as if he were feeling for his heartbeat. And you forgave me, he said, for not being able to make you immortal, or end my own immortality. There's nothing to forgive, Alec said. I don't want to live forever. He laid one hand over Magnus's, twining their fingers together. We might not have that much time, said Alec, I'll get old and I'll die. But I promise I won't leave you until then. It's the only promise I can make. A lot of Shadowhunters don't get old, Magnus said. Alec could feel the thrum of his pulse. It was strange, Magnus, like this, without the words that usually came to him so easily. Alec turned around in Magnus's embrace so that they faced each other, taking in all the details that he never got tired of, the sharp bones of Magnus's face, the gold green of his eyes, the mouth that always seemed about to smile, even though he looked worried now. Even if it were just days, I would want to spend them all with you. Does that mean anything? Yes, Magnus said. It means that from now on, we make every day matter.
They were dancing. Lily was playing something slow and soft on the piano, and Clary drifted among the other wedding guests, Jace's arms around her. It was exactly the kind of dancing she liked, not too complicated, mostly a matter of holding on to your partner and not doing anything to trip them up. She had her cheek against Jace's shirt front, the fabric rumpled and soft under her skin. His hand played idly with the curls that had fallen from her chignon, fingers tracing the back of her neck. She couldn't help but remember a dream she'd had a long time ago, in which she'd been dancing with Jace in the Hall of Accords. He'd been so removed back then, so often cold. It amazed her that sometimes now, when she looked at him, that was the same Jace. "The Jace you helped make me," he had said. "A Jace I like much better." But he was not the only one who had changed. She had changed too. She opened her mouth to tell him so when there was a tap on her shoulder. She turned to see her mother, smiling at them both. "Jace," Jocelyn said, "if I could ask you a favor." Jace and Clary had both stopped dancing. Neither said anything. Jocelyn had come to like Jace much better in the past 6 months than she had liked him before. She was even, Clary would venture to say, fond of him. But she still wasn't always thrilled about Clary's Shadowhunter boyfriend. "Lily's tired of playing, but everyone's enjoying the piano so much, and you play, don't you? Clary told me how talented you are. Would you play for us?" Jace swept a glance towards Clary, so quick that she saw it only because she knew him well enough to look. He had manners, though, exquisite ones when he chose to use them. He smiled at Jocelyn like an angel, and then went over to the piano. A moment later, the strains of classical music filled the tent. Tessa Gray and the boy who had been Brother Zachariah sat at the father's table in the corner and watched as Jace Herondale's light fingers danced over the keys of the piano. Jace wore no tie and his shirt was partly unbuttoned, his face a study in concentration as he abandoned himself to the music with a passion. "Chopin." Tessa identified the music with a soft smile. I wonder if little Emma Carstairs will play the violin someday." "Careful," her companion said with a laugh in his voice. "You can't force these things." "It's hard," she said, turning to look at him earnestly. "I wish you could tell her more of the connection between the two of you, that she might not feel so alone." Sorrow turned down the corners of his sensitive mouth. "You know I cannot. Not yet. I hinted at it to her. That was all I could do." "We will keep an eye on her," said Tessa. "We will always keep an eye on her." She touched the marks on his cheeks, remnants of his time as a silent brother, almost reverently. "I remember you said this war was a story of Lightwoods and Herondales and Fairchilds. And it is. And Blackthorns and Carstairs as well. And it's amazing to see them. But when I do, it's as if I see the past that stretches out behind them. I watch Jace Herondale play, and I see the ghosts that rise up in the music. Don't you? Ghosts are memories, and we carry them because those we love do not leave the world." "Yes," she said. "I just wish he were here to see this with us, just here with us one more time." She felt the rough silk of his black hair as he bent to kiss her fingers lightly, a courtly gesture from a bygone age. "He is with us, Tessa. He can see us, I believe it, I feel it, the way I used to know sometimes if he was sad or angry or lonely or happy." She touched the pearl bracelet at her wrist, and then his face with light, adoring fingers. "And what is he now?" she whispered. "Happy or wistful or sad or lonely?"
Do not tell me he is lonely, for you must know, you always knew. He is happy, Tessa. It gives him joy to see us together, and it always gave me joy to see the two of you. He smiled, that smile that had all the truth of the world in it, and slid his fingers from hers as he sat back. Two figures were approaching their table, a tall red-headed woman and a girl with the same red hair and green eyes.
Speaking of the past, he said, I think there's someone here who wants to talk to you.
Clary was watching church with amusement when her mother sidled up to her. The cat had been festooned with dozens of tiny silver wedding bells and, in a vengeful rage, was gnawing a hole in one of the piano legs.
Mom, Clary said suspiciously, what are you up to?
Her mother stroked her hair, looking fond.
There's someone I want you to meet, she said, taking Clary's hand. It's time.
Time? Time for what? Clary let herself be pulled along, only half protesting, to a white-draped table in the corner of the tent. At it sat the brown-haired girl she had seen earlier. The girl looked up as Clary approached. Brother Zachariah was rising from her side. He gave Clary a soft smile and moved across the room to talk to Magnus, who had come down from the hill holding hands with Alec.
Clary, Jocelyn said, I want you to meet Tessa.
Isabel. She looked up. She had been leaning against the side of the piano, letting Jace's playing and the faint sound of church gnawing wood lull her. It was music that reminded her of her childhood, of Jace spending hours in the music room, filling the halls of the Institute with a cascade of notes. It was Simon. He had unbuttoned his denim jacket in the warmth of the tent, and she could see the flush of heat and awkwardness across his cheekbones. There was something alien about it. A Simon who blushed and was cold and hot and grew up and grew away from her. His dark eyes were curious as they rested on her. She saw some recognition in them, but it wasn't total. It wasn't the way Simon had looked at her before, longing, and that sweet ache and sense that here was someone who saw her, saw Isabel, the Isabel she presented to the world and the Isabel she hid away, tucked into the shadows where only a very few could see her. Simon had been one of those few. Now he was something else.
Isabel,
he said again, and she sensed Jace looking over at her, his eyes curious as his hands darted over the piano keys.
Would you dance with me?
She sighed and nodded.
All right,
she said, and let him draw her onto the dance floor. In her heels she was as tall as he was, their eyes were on a level. Behind the glasses, his were the same dark coffee brown.
I've been told, he said, and cleared his throat. Or, at least, I get the sense that you and I...
Don't, she said. Don't talk about it. If you don't remember, then I don't want to hear it. One of his hands was on her shoulder, the other on her waist. His skin was warm against hers, not cool as she remembered it. He seemed incredibly human and fragile.
But I want to remember it, he said.
And she remembered how argumentative he'd always been. That, at least, hadn't changed.
I remember some of it. It's not like I don't know who you are, Isabel.
You would call me Izzy, she said, suddenly feeling very tired.
Izzy, not Isabel.
He leaned in, and she felt his breath against her hair.
Izzy, he said, I remember kissing you.
She shivered.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do, he said. His hand slid to her back, fingers brushing the space just below her shoulder blade that always made her squirm.
It's been months now, he said in a low voice, and nothing's felt quite right. I've always felt like something was missing, and now I know it was this, all of this, but it was also you. I didn't remember during the day, but I dreamed at night about you, Isabel.
You dreamed about us?
Just you, the girl with the dark, dark eyes.
He touched the edge of her hair with light fingers.
Magnus tells me I was a hero, he said, and I see on your face when you're looking at me that you're searching for that guy. The guy you knew who was a hero, who did great things. I don't remember doing those things. I don't know if that makes me not a hero anymore, but I'd like to try to be that guy again. The guy who gets to kiss you because he earned it, if you'll be patient enough to let me try.
It was such a Simon thing to say. She looked up at him,
and for the first time she felt a swell of hope in her chest and didn't immediately move to crush it down. I might let you, she said. Try, that is. I can't promise anything. I wouldn't expect you to. His face lit up, and she saw the shadow of a memory move behind his eyes. You're a heartbreaker, Isabel Lightwood, he said. I remember that much, at least.
Tessa is a warlock, said Jocelyn, although a very unusual kind of warlock. Remember what I told you, that I was panicked about how to put the spell on you that all shadowhunters receive when they're born, the protection spell, and that Brother Zachariah and a female warlock stood in and helped with the ceremony. This is the warlock I was talking about, Tessa Gray. You told me that was where you got the idea for the name Frey. Clary sank down in the seat opposite Tessa at the round table. F for Fairchild, she said, realizing aloud. And the rest for Grey. Tessa smiled, and her face lit up. It was an honor. You were a baby, you wouldn't recall it, said Jocelyn. But Clary thought of the way Tessa had looked familiar to her the first time she had seen her, and wondered. Why are you just telling me now? Clary demanded, looking up at her mother, who was standing by her chair, twisting her new wedding ring around her finger anxiously. Why not before? I had asked to be there when she told you, if she chose to, said Tessa. Her voice was musical, soft and sweet, with the trace of an English accent. And I fear I have long separated myself from the Shadowhunter world. My memories of it are sweet and bitter, sometimes more bitter than sweet. Jocelyn dropped a kiss onto Clary's head. Why don't you two talk, she said, and walked away toward Luke, who was chatting with Kadir. Clary looked at Tessa's smile and said, You're a warlock, but you're friends with a silent brother. More than friends, that's a little odd, isn't it? Tessa leaned her elbows on the table. A pearl bracelet gleamed around her left wrist. She touched it idly, as if through force of habit. Everything about my life is quite out of the ordinary, but then the same could be said for you, couldn't it? Her eyes sparkled. Jace Herondale plays the piano very well. And he knows it. That sounds like a Herondale, Tessa laughed. I must tell you, Clary, that I learned only recently that Jace had decided that he wished to be a Herondale and not a Lightwood. Both are honorable families, and both I have known, but my fate has always been most entwined with that of the Herondales. She looked over at Jace, and there was a sort of wistfulness in her expression. There are families, the Blackthorns, the Herondales, the Carstairs, for whom I have always felt a special affinity. I have watched over them from a distance, though I have learned not to interfere. That is in part why I retreated to the Spiral Labyrinth after the uprising. It is a place so far from the world, so hidden, I thought I could find peace there from my knowledge of what had happened to the Herondales. And then after the mortal war, I asked Magnus if I should approach Jace, speak to him of the past of the Herondales, but he said give it time. That to bear the burden of the knowledge of the past was a heavy one. So I returned to the labyrinth. She swallowed. This was a dark year. Such a dark year for Shadowhunters. For Downworlders. For all of us. So much loss and grief. In the Spiral Labyrinth we heard rumors. And then there were the Undarkened. And I thought the best thing I could do to help was to find a cure. But there was none. I wish we could have found one. Sometimes there is not always a cure. She looked toward Zachariah with a light in her eyes. Then, sometimes there are miracles. Zachariah told me of the way in which he became mortal again. He said it was a story of Lightwoods and Herondales and Fairchilds. She glanced over at Zachariah, who was busy patting Church. The cat had climbed up onto the champagne table and was gleefully knocking over glasses. Her look was one of exasperation and fondness mixed together. You don't know what it means to me, how grateful I am for what you did for for Zachariah, what all of you did for him. It was Jace more than anyone else. Did Zachariah just pick up Church? Clary stared in astonishment. Zachariah was holding the cat, who had gone boneless, his tail curled around the former Silent Brother's arm. That cat hates everybody. Tessa gave a small smile. I wouldn't say everybody. So Zachariah is mortal now? Clary asked. Just an ordinary Shadowhunter. Yes, Tessa said. He and I have known each other a long time. We had a standing meeting every year in early January. This year, when he arrived for it, to my shock, he was mortal.
And you didn't know before he just showed up? I would have killed him.
Tessa grinned. Well, that would have somewhat defeated the point, and I think he wasn't sure how I would receive him, mortal as he is, when I am not mortal. Her expression reminded Clary of Magnus. That look of old, old eyes in a young face reminded her of a sorrow that was too still and too deep for those with short human lives to understand. He will age and die, and I will remain as I am. But he has had a long life, longer than most, and understands me. Neither he nor I are the age we seem, and we love each other. That is the important thing. Tessa closed her eyes and for a moment seemed to let the notes of the piano music wash over her.
I have something for you, she said, opening her eyes.
They were gray, the color of rainwater.
For both of you. For you and for Jace as well.
She slid something out of her pocket and held it out to Clary. It was a dull silver circlet, a family ring, glimmering with the pattern of engraved birds in flight.
This ring belonged to James Herondale, she said.
It is a true Herondale ring, many years old. If Jace has decided that he wishes to be a Herondale, he should have it to wear. Clary took the ring, it just fit onto her thumb.
Thank you, she said.
Though you could give it to him yourself. Maybe now is the time to talk to him. Tessa shook her head.
Look how happy he is, she said. He is deciding who he is and who he wants to be, finding joy in it. He should have a bit more time to be happy like that, before he picks up any burdens again.
She took up something that had been lying on the chair beside her and held it out to Clary. It was a copy of the Shadowhunter's Codex, bound in blue velvet.
This is for you, she said. I am sure you have your own, but this was dear to me. There is an inscription on the back, see?
And she turned the book over so that Clary could see where words had been stamped in gold against the velvet. Freely we serve because we freely love, Clary read out and looked up at Tessa.
Thank you, this is a lovely thing. Are you sure you want to give it away?
Tessa smiled.
The Fairchilds, too, have been dear to me in my life, she said, and your red hair and your stubbornness recall to me people I once loved. Clary, she said, and leaned forward across the table so that her jade pendant swung free. I feel a kinship with you, too. You who have lost both brother and father. I know you have been judged and spoken of as the daughter of Valentine Morgenstern, and now the sister of Jonathan. There will always be those who want to tell you who you are based on your name or the blood in your veins. Do not let other people decide who you are. Decide for yourself.
She looked over at Jace, whose hands were dancing on the piano keys. Light from the tapers caught like stars in his hair and made his skin shine.
The freedom is not a gift, it is a birthright. I hope that you and Jace will use it.
You sound so... Tessa, don't frighten her.
It was Zachariah coming to stand behind Tessa's chair.
I'm not, Tessa said with a laugh.
She had her head tipped back, and Clary wondered if that was how she herself looked looking up at Jace. She hoped so. It was a safe and happy look. The look of someone who was confident in the love they gave and received.
I was just giving her advice.
Sounds terrifying.
It was odd how Zachariah's speaking voice sounded both like and unlike his voice in Clary's mind. In life, his English accent was stronger than Tessa's. He also had laughter in his voice as he reached down and helped Tessa up out of her chair.
I'm afraid we must go. We have a long journey ahead of us.
Where are you going? Clary asked, holding the codex carefully on her lap.
Los Angeles. Tessa said, and Clary recalled her saying that the Blackthorns were a family in which she had a particular interest.
Clary was glad to hear it. She knew that Emma and the others were living in the Institute with Julian's uncle, but the idea that they might have someone special to watch over them, a guardian angel of sorts, was reassuring.
It was good to meet you, Clary said. Thank you for everything.
Tessa smiled radiantly and disappeared into the crowd, saying she was going to bid Jocelyn goodbye. Zachariah gathered up his coat in her wrap, Clary watching him curiously.
I remember once you told me, she said, that you had loved two people more than anything else in the world.
Was Tessa one of them?
She is one of them, he said agreeably, shrugging himself into his coat. I have not stopped loving her, nor my Parabatai. Love does not stop when someone dies.
Your Parabatai? You lost your Parabatai? Clary said, feeling a sense of shocked hurt for him. She knew what that meant to Nephilim.
Not from my heart, for I have not forgotten, he said, and she heard a whisper of the sadness of ages in his voice, and remembered him in the silent city, a wraith of parchment smoke. We are all the pieces of what we remember. We hold in ourselves the hopes and fears of those who love us. As long as there is love and memory, there is no true loss.
Clary thought of Max, of Armitis, of Raphael and Jordan, and even of Jonathan, and felt the prickle of tears in her throat. Zachariah slung Tess's scarf around his shoulders.
Tell Jace Herondale that he plays Chopin's Concerto No. 2 very well, he said, and vanished after Tessa into the crowd. She stared after him, clutching the ring and the codex.
Has anyone seen Church? Said a voice in her ear.
It was Isabel, her fingers tucked around Simon's arm. Maya stood beside them, fiddling with a gold clasp in her curly hair.
I think Zachariah just stole our cat. I swear I saw him putting Church in the back seat of a car.
There's no way, said Jace, appearing beside Clary. He had his sleeves rolled up to the elbows and was flushed from the effort of playing. Church hates everyone.
Not everyone, Clary murmured with a smile.
Simon was looking at Jace as if he were both fascinating and also a little alarming.
Did I bite you?
Jace touched a scar on his throat.
I can't believe you remember that.
Did we roll around on the bottom of a boat?
Yes, you bit me. Yes, I kind of liked it. Yes, let's not talk about it again, said Jace. You're not a vampire anymore. Focus.
To be fair, you bit Alec too, said Isabel.
When did that happen? Maya asked, her face lighting with amusement as Bat came up behind her. Without a word, he took the clip out of her hand and slid it back into her hair. He snapped the clasp efficiently. His hands lingered a moment, gentle against her hair.
What happens in the demon realm stays in the demon realm, said Jace.
He glanced over at Clary.
Do you want to go for a walk?
A walk or a walk? Isabel inquired. Like, are you going to...
I think we should all go down to the lake, Clary said, standing up, the codex in one hand and the ring in the other.
It's beautiful down there, especially at night. I'd like my friends to see it.
I remember it, Simon said, and gave her a smile that made her heart feel like it was expanding in her chest.
The farmhouse was where they had gone every summer. It would always be tied to Simon in her mind. That he remembered it made her happier than she could have imagined being that morning. She slid her hand into Jace's as they all headed away from the tent, Isabel darting off to tell her brother to go fetch Magnus along as well. Clary had wanted to be alone with Jace earlier. Now she wanted to be with everyone. She had loved Jace for what felt like a long time now. Loved him so much that sometimes she felt like she might die from it, because it was something she needed and couldn't have. But that was gone now, desperation replaced by peace and a quiet happiness. Now that she no longer felt that every moment with him was snatched from the possibility of disaster, now that she could imagine a whole lifetime of times with him that were peaceful or funny or casual or relaxed or kind, she wanted nothing more than to walk down to the farmhouse lake with all her friends and celebrate the day. As they passed down over the ridge onto the path to the lake, she glanced behind her. She saw Jocelyn and Luke standing by the tent, watching after them. She saw Luke smile at her and her mother raise a hand in a wave before lowering it to clasp her new husband's. It had been the same for them, she thought. Years of separation and sadness, and now they had a lifetime of times. She raised her hand in an answering wave, and then hurried to catch up with her friends.
Magnus was leaning against the outside of the barn, watching Clary and Tessa deep in conversation, when Katerina came up to him. She had blue flowers in her hair that set off her sapphire blue skin. He glanced out across the orchard, down toward where the lake shimmered like water held in the cup of a hand.
You look worried, said Katerina, placing her hand on his shoulder companionably.
What is it?
I saw you kissing that Shadowhunter boy of yours earlier, so it can't be that.
Magnus shook his head.
No, everything with Alec is fine.
I saw you speaking to Tessa, too, Katerina said, craning her neck to look.
Strange to have her here. Is that what's bothering you? past and future colliding, it must feel a bit strange.
Maybe, Magnus said, though he didn't think it was that.
All ghosts, the shadows and might-have-beens. Though I always liked Tessa and her boys. Her son was a piece of work, said Katerina. As was her daughter.
Magnus laughed, though it was as brittle as twigs in winter.
I feel the past weighing on me heavily these days, Katerina. The repetition of old mistakes. I hear things, rumblings in downworld, the rumor of coming strife. The fair folk are a proud people, the proudest. They will not take the shaming from the clave without retaliation.
They are proud, but patient, said Katerina. They may wait a long time, generations, for vengeance. You cannot fear it coming now, and the shadow may not descend for years yet.
Magnus didn't look at her. He was looking down at the tent, where Clary sat talking with Tessa, where Alex stood side by side with Maya and Bat, laughing, where Isabel and Simon were dancing to the music Jace was playing on the piano, the haunting sweet notes of Chopin reminding him of another time, and the sound of a violin at Christmas.
Ah, said Katerina. You worry about them, you worry about the shadow descending upon those you love. Them or their children.
Alec had broken away from the others and was heading up the hill toward the barn. Magnus watched him come, a dark shadow against the darker sky.
Better to love and fear than feel nothing. That is how we petrify, said Katerina, and she touched his arm. I'm sorry about Raphael, by the way. I never got a chance to say it. I know you saved his life once.
And then he saved mine, Magnus said, and looked up as Alec reached them. Alec gave Katerina a courteous nod. Magnus, we're going down to the lake, he said. Do you want to come?
Why? Magnus inquired.
Alec shrugged. Clary says it's pretty, he said. I mean, I've seen it before, but there was a huge angel rising out of it, and that was distracting. He held his hand out. Come on, everyone's going. Katerina smiled.
Carpe diem, she said to Magnus. Don't waste your time fretting.
She picked up her skirts and wandered off toward the trees, her feet like blue flowers in the grass. Magnus took Alec's hand. There were fireflies down by the lake. They illuminated the night with their winking flashes as the group spread out jackets and blankets, which Magnus produced from what he claimed was thin air, though Clary suspected that they had been illegally summoned from Bed Bath and beyond. The lake was a silver dime, reflecting back the sky and all its thousands of stars. Clary could hear Alec naming off the constellations to Magnus, the lion, the bow, the winged horse. Maya had kicked off her shoes and was walking barefoot along the lakeshore. Bat had followed her, and as Clary watched, he took her hand hesitantly. She let him. Simon and Isabel were leaning together, whispering. Every once in a while, Isabel would laugh. Her face was brighter than it had been in months. Jay sat down on one of the blankets and drew Clary with him, his legs on either side of her. She leaned her back against him, feeling the comforting beat of his heart against her spine. His arms reached around her and his fingers touched the codex in her lap.
What's this?
A gift for me, and there's one for you too, she said, and took his hand, unfolding his fingers one by one until his hand was open. She placed the slightly battered silver ring onto it.
A Herondale ring? He sounded bewildered. Where did you...
It used to belong to James Herondale, she said. I don't have a family tree around, so I don't know what that means exactly, but he was clearly one of your ancestors. I remember you saying the Iron Sisters would have to make you a new ring because Stephen hadn't left you one. But now you have one.
He slid it onto the ring finger of his right hand. Every time, he said quietly, every time I think I'm missing a piece of me, you give it back.
There were no words, so she didn't say any, just turned around in his arms and kissed him on the cheek. He was beautiful under the night sky, the stars shedding their light down over him, gleaming against his hair and eyes and the Herondale ring shining on his finger, a reminder of everything that had been and everything that would be. We are all the pieces of what we remember. We hold in ourselves the hopes and fears of those who love us. As long as there is love and memory, there is no true loss.
Do you like the name Herondale? He asked.
It's your name, so I love it, she said.
There are some pretty bad Shadowhunter names I could have ended up with,
he said. Bloodstick, Ravenhaven.
Bloodstick can't possibly be a name.
It may have fallen out of favor, he acknowledged.
Herondale, on the other hand, is melodic. Dulcet, one might say. Think of the sound of Clary Herondale.
Oh my God, that sounds horrible.
We all must sacrifice for love. He grinned and reached around her to pick up the codex. This is old, an old edition, he said, turning it over. The inscription on the back is Milton.
Of course you know that, she said fondly, and leaned against him as he turned the book over in his hands.
Magnus had started a fire, and it was burning merrily at the lakeside, sending up sparks into the sky. The reflection of the burning raced along the scarlet of Isabel's necklace as she turned to say something to Simon, and it shone in the sharp gleam of Magnus's eyes and along the water of the lake, turning the ripples to lines of gold. It picked out the inscription written on the back of the codex, as Jace read the words aloud to Clary, his voice as soft as music in the glittering dark.
Freely we serve, because we freely love, as in our will to love or not. In this we stand or fall.
The Mortal Instruments, Book 6, City of Heavenly Fire, was written by Cassandra Clare and read by Sophie Turner and Jason Doring. Editing and post-production by Frog Pond Productions. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. The associate producer was Ben Rimmelauer. The Mortal Instruments, Book 6, City of Heavenly Fire, was produced and directed by Christina Zarafanidis. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. City of Heavenly Fire is available in hardcover from Margaret K. McElderry Books. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio, The Mortal Instruments, Book 2, City of Ashes, Book 3, City of Glass, both read by Natalie Moore. Book 4, City of Fallen Angels, read by Molly C. Quinn and Ed Westwick. And Book 5, City of Lost Souls, read by Molly C. Quinn.
And now a sneak peek at Cassandra Clare's new series, The Dark Artificers, coming fall 2015. A letter from the Fairy Court to the Los Angeles Institute. To Arthur Blackthorne, head of the Los Angeles Institute. We beseech you once more on a matter of great import. As you know, in past months, the marked and mutilated bodies of both our people and yours have been found all around the city of Los Angeles. This is your domain, and so once again we humble ourselves before you and ask for aid. After the events of the Dark War, the fair folk no longer fall under your protection and the protection of the Accords, but still we hope. It is rare for fairy to admit itself to be desperate, but we are desperate now. If you will not give us succor, then at least perhaps you will bargain with us. Investigate the deaths of our people, and we will grant unto you the return of your nephew, the brother of the children now living in your house. The Wild Hunt does not give back what belongs to it, but we will give Mark Blackthorne back to you. We await your words.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.